Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. My guest for this episode of the podcast is Wang Yi from Xi'an, China. Wang Yi is only 21 years old, yet he's already lived a really interesting life. Growing up in Xi'an, he became one of the early adopters of the internet. And during that time, he learned how to speak English, and he also taught himself how to program computers. Then he went to an elite high school in China, and after that decided to go to university in the United States, where he took three majors at once and did pretty much nothing but study. Now, that might not seem so unusual for an elite Chinese student, but after 2 years of doing this, he decided to pack up everything and come back to China, partly because he wanted to increase his social life, do something besides study, but then also because he wanted to keep studying only online. But then after a while in Beijing, he realized, well, I don't have to stay in Beijing to study online. I can go anywhere in the world. So he did a bit of research and became a digital nomad. He traveled to Southeast Asia for a few months. During that time, he worked, he built phone apps, and did some other programming work while continuing to take online coursework. And then he came back to Beijing and stayed with me for a few days in my apartment. During that time, he actually started planning his next trip, which would be much bigger and more ambitious. We're going to learn more about that trip and the rest of Wang Yi's life story as we jump into our discussion. Wang Yi?
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming on. So why don't you take us back to where you're from and where did you grow up?
Yes. I grew up in Xi'an. If you know about China, I think you'll know about it because that city served as China's capital for the longest time in history, and it's right in the middle of China.
Yeah, it's geographically right in the center of the
country? Yeah, right in the center.
And you say it was a capital for most of history. Like, yeah. Do you mean Mongolian times or before that? Or what dynasty was it the capital?
Since Qin was 2,000 years ago.
Oh, a long time ago.
And Tang Dynasty was 1,000 years ago, I guess.
So during both of those dynasties, it was the capital?
Yes, it was the capital.
Okay.
The time it served as the capital was definitely longer than Beijing.
Yeah, isn't Beijing a more recent capital city in China?
Yeah, more recent.
Okay. I was in Xi'an a couple of times now. I've been there a couple of times, and I went to check out the Terracotta Warriors, which was amazing. This is a world-famous site. That's located right in your city, right?
Or yeah.
Nearby?
Yes.
Just outside? Have you obviously gone to see him, right?
Yes, just once.
Only once?
Yeah.
Well, at least you've done once.
Yeah.
I traveled with a guy for a long time who grew up in Paris. And he'd never been to the Eiffel Tower.
Oh.
It's like...
I'm better than that.
Yes, you are. It's this common thing. Like, wherever you live, you just don't do the main touristy things. And actually, I spent like my first 9 or 10 months living in Beijing, and I didn't go to the Great Wall for like 9 months, and the Great Wall is like an hour from here, from like my apartment right now. But that's actually where we met, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
we did a bit of hiking and camping on the Great Wall.
Yes,
yeah, that
that's
was a good
where
time.
We met. Yes,
that was a lot of fun. And I guess I talk about that a lot on the podcast because definitely it's one of my highlights of China. Have you gone more than once to the Great Wall, too? To other sections?
Yes. Actually, I've been to Jianko section.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where we went. Three times,
yes, where we went.
Yeah.
Three times, maybe four by now. And the other section called Jingshanling once.
Jingshan, is that further away?
Yeah, that's further away.
Oh, okay. Would you recommend that one?
Yeah. Oh, I would recommend maybe. That a lot because the scenery there is different. You pass through some little villages, fields, even a military base.
Oh, well, yeah. Pass through it or around it.
Yeah, you have to get around it. And
yeah.
Yes, actually some people do kind of sneak through it. But
really?
That's horrible, don't they?
That sounds very dangerous.
Yes.
That sounds like you're asking for trouble. Okay, yeah. I'll avoid that one. But yeah, maybe I'll go there later. Once it gets a little bit warmer, I'd love to go back out and camp on the wall. That was so much fun.
Yes.
But let's go back to your hometown, Xi'an. What's the geography like there?
Well, technically, they would say that Xi'an is part of Southwest China.
Southwest?
No, Northwest.
Oh, Northwest. Sorry. Oh, yeah, okay.
But it's actually at the southeast tip of Northwest China.
Oh, boy. It's getting complicated. Yeah, it's kind of... It's not quite into the what you'd think of as Western China, like
no
Xinjiang, but it's definitely not. It's got more of a Muslim population, right? More
yes.
Slightly more Middle Eastern than like Beijing would be, but
yes.
not like Kashgar or something or Xinjiang province.
So it's, all the headquarters of. The Northwest divisions of large national companies are set in Xi'an.
Oh, all right. And another interesting thing about Xi'an is the city wall.
Yes, yeah. We got lucky about it because in the past China had a lot of city walls, but it's Xi'an city wall that was so perfectly preserved.
Right. Yeah, Beijing's. Well, I think it's completely gone now, or maybe I guess there's a one gate right by Tiananmen Square.
Maybe I don't know about it.
Ah, okay. I mean, the old Beijing used to be surrounded by a wall, and that's all but since been ripped out, and that's basically what now is Second Ring Road.
Oh.
And a lot of the subway stops actually still have men in their name.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Door or gate, so it's like the old. Entrances and exits from the city, and they still kind of retain that old name, so you can kind of visualize where the wall was, but it's all gone now. But Xi'an still has it; it's completely intact.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool thing. The whole center of the city is inside a giant wall, and there's this lively Muslim quarter that I just wrote a little bit about. And
yeah,
I thought that was really interesting too. Do people from Xi'an actually go to the Muslim quarter to go shopping or hang out, or is it only for tourists?
Occasionally, we do go there.
Okay.
Because it has a high concentration of delicious Muslim food.
Oh, it's so good.
However, yeah. the reality is that if you live in Xi'an for longer enough, you'll find those really good ones in other places.
Ah, okay.
They're not in one location, but they are better than those restaurants in the Muslim quarter.
Oh, they're better even.
Yeah, they're better.
I really enjoyed eating yang rou pao mo. That was really good. Can you explain that to people, what it is?
Oh, let me see how, because it's like a mutton soup. And
mutton, like sheep?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have to... They usually would give you a whole... Chinese bread, and you have to carry the part on your own and give the bowl back to them, and they will cook it.
Mm.
So the little bits of the bread would actually kind of go into that soup.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's yesterday we actually ate a different dish, but we went to a Xinjiang restaurant for lunch.
Yeah.
And we ate da panji. Oh. I did anyway.
Yeah.
Which is like literally just means big plate of chicken. But that came with bread too, like flatbread.
Oh, yes.
And it was almost soupy. There was a soupy mixture inside. It was delicious, and I was eating that with my hands, which I imagine you're supposed to do, but a couple of people came up and kind of made fun of me, I think, for not using my chopsticks to eat the bread. Is that what they were doing?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I get a lot of attention wherever I go because I'm this big, giant, white dude with long hair.
Yeah.
And in the middle of China, so it's just normal for people to come up and talk to me, but I think some of them were maybe even critical of me using my hands to eat. But it just seems so much easier than using chopsticks to eat this giant piece of a flat bread.
Yes, actually, I would use chopsticks for that.
You would? Okay. I would. Okay. Plus, I'm left-handed, and so eating with using my hand, my left hand, in some cultures is obviously not a good idea either.
I don't think the Chinese pay attention to that.
That doesn't matter.
Hand, right hand. No.
Yeah, yeah. I mean. It's such a normal experience for me when I'm eating or doing anything for people to come up and talk to me, or sometimes they point and laugh, and sometimes I'm not even sure if they think I'm using my chopsticks wrong. I probably am using them wrong, or if maybe they're pointing out that I'm using my left hand and not my right hand. I don't know. Or maybe they just think I look silly or something.
Oh, I think you look very cute.
Well, thank you, Wang Yi. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Usually middle-aged men who come up and talk to me, too, or older.
Yeah, they just wanted to find a reason to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because you look so cute.
Oh, so anything I have, they're just coming up with any excuse, then.
Yeah, they just wanted to talk.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll keep that in mind. I mean, I don't get offended by it or anything. I don't know. I like it. It's one of the reasons I like living here, actually.
Yeah.
But let's get back to your story. I know you grew up in Xi'an, and you speak very good English, and so I was hoping to talk about that. Like, how did you learn English, and where, and when?
Well, it's a long story.
Okay. Well, we've got time.
Yeah, because when I was in primary school, the whole system was actually obviously experimenting with how to teach the students English. It was becoming part of the required course in the school system.
Okay, well, so first of all, how old are you?
I was,
now, or how old are you?
I don't know, third grade.
Oh, okay.
Primary school.
And just so people have an idea of what timeline we're looking at, how old are you now?
I'm 21 right now, so then that was when I was 9 years old.
Oh, yeah.
9 or 10.
Man, I forget how young you are. 21. So that was, 12 years ago? So around 2003, 2004?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, go on, though.
Yes, I was in third grade, and...
Uh-huh.
They suddenly introduced us an English class. We got two of those. That's 2 hours every week.
Yeah.
But apparently the teacher didn't know how to teach. And the students thought it was like the physical training course. It kind of wasn't required.
Mm.
It was just an unnecessary addition. We didn't have to pay some attention to it at all.
Okay. Was your teacher Chinese?
She was Chinese.
Huh. Looking back, do you think she spoke good English?
Probably not.
It's so hard to learn from a non-native speaker, too.
No, yeah. I bet she's never been out of China.
Okay. But you picked it up. So did you start learning it right away?
No. So she was teaching us that English class for the entire primary school. The point was, I learned nothing.
Oh, you couldn't even say hello or anything, or just.
Oh, I could say hello, and I still remember I could say watermelon.
Watermelon.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
because my family kind of encouraged me to learn English at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
I told them that I wanted a watermelon, and they said, if you could say the word in English, we'll get you one.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. And, well, to their surprise, I knew how to say watermelon.
And you got some.
Yeah.
It's interesting. That was one of the first fruit words, at least, that I learned, too.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's shigua, right?
Yes,
yeah, shigua. Yeah. It's like Western melon is how it's directly translated.
Yeah. Because most of my memory for that time has been gone. So from this story, I actually knew that, well, I could say watermelon when I was in primary school. And that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how did you continue to learn then after this experience?
After that, well, right before entering junior high school, my mom sent me to a kind of famous English teacher. He's Chinese. He was really good.
Okay.
He just knew the way to teach English to absolute beginners more than most of those other Chinese teachers do. His most important idea was that you had to learn all the phonetic alphabet.
Yeah.
It's like pinyin in Chinese.
Okay. You have to learn all the sounds that all the letters
sounds,
make.
Yeah, all the sounds and all the letters could relate to the sound.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, what he did was he taught me to understand this whole system of how the English pronunciation worked.
Mm-hmm.
That summer made English so much easier for me.
Okay, so you could begin reading then.
Yeah. I was really onto that thing of learning English.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I entered junior high school, things became better because it was a really good public high school in China.
Hmm.
And we got brilliant teachers.
Okay.
And the other important thing that is that because of that teacher I got before junior high school, I did so well in the English class.
Yeah.
And that test score in English, the first test score that came out was in English. In the junior high school I went to. And that totally surprised me. Because nobody thought I could rank near the top in such a highly competitive high school.
So people doubted your abilities?
No, because you look at that junior high school, perhaps everyone had some test score that ranked top 1% in the whole province.
Oh, everyone in your school was in the top 1%?
Yes.
Whoa, this is like an elite school then.
Yes. Okay. I think that every student who went to that high school would doubt his or her own ability to still like remain as a maybe the top 1 or top 3 in the whole class.
Okay.
So that totally surprised me. And that's the first test score we got. And I got a lot of confidence in English.
Okay.
And I think maybe because of that, I remained like working harder than usual at English.
Yeah. Now, did you know any foreigners at the time or any?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Then for the next 3 years in junior high school, we just followed the standard English program that the government set.
Okay.
It's the same for all public schools. But we got better teachers. At least we could, every one of us could kind of memorize 3,000 words.
Yeah.
By the end of the junior high school.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, is that enough to have a good conversation? I don't even think about this, I guess.
No, it was enough to read some easy articles in English.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, by the end of junior high school, I was trying to read New York Times, but I couldn't understand a thing. I wasted a lot of time on it.
Really? Oh, that's so complicated.
Because New York Times like to use a lot of complicated abstract words.
Yeah, they use a lot of big words.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's. I might have to look up a few words when I read it.
yeah, I still do right now.
Yeah. So would you say your interest in learning English, was it based more on this idea that one day you might go and travel somewhere, or do you think it was just to follow this curriculum?
Yeah. For the entire junior high school, I was just following the curriculum. I wanted to do well.
So whatever they threw at you, any classes that they told you to take, you just wanted to do that class really well.
Yeah, yes, okay. Yes. Okay. English was one of those. And the turning point happened in the third year of my junior high school. I was in that so-called computer science class.
So-called computer science.
Oh. That was computer science.
It was just computer science.
Yeah.
Okay.
So called because it wasn't really computer science. It was like what English was when I was in primary school. It was a thing that the government wanted to push to the schools to experiment on. It was a new course. And in the same way, the teacher didn't know how to teach at all.
All right.
And
did you have computers at least?
Yeah, we had computers, and okay. That's good. We had internet. That's, literally introduced to how to use internet at that time.
Oh, okay.
But we had nothing to do as a class.
Okay.
So I went to MIT's open courseware.
Online?
Yeah.
Or you just went to MIT's website?
I didn't know how. I just randomly came across at MIT's coursework.
Oh, okay. And you just get, is this something anybody can just join? Or do you have to apply for it? Or what is it?
I think the MIT open courseware is something that everybody could use. It's an open part of MIT's curriculum.
Oh, all right.
I looked at it, and it was attractive.
Yeah.
Huh. So
I might have to go check this out once we're done recording.
Yeah. I still remember the one I looked at was about Shakespeare. Uh-huh. You could still find it today.
Okay.
Well, MIT's website looked so cool.
Yeah.
That made me interested in going to MIT.
Oh, it wasn't the coursework, it was the look of the website?
Very much of it. Because how the hell was I able to understand the course? It was about Shakespeare.
Oh, alright.
Shakespeare.
It's totally foreign concept.
It was totally foreign. I couldn't understand a thing, but, well, the people appeared to be good. They were attractive, and that's a very big turning point for the whole decision to go to U.S. for study. But before that, there was always rumors that U.S. was better, U.S. was doing better in higher education, something like that. I've been hearing that a lot, but the turning point was really that MIT open courseware site.
Yeah. So then what, did you go to MIT?
No, I didn't.
Ah, well, what happened? Where did you go?
Well, I didn't get in. I got into UC Berkeley.
Yeah?
And I decided to go.
Well, that's a very good school.
Yes, thanks. But it was really what I thought of as a safe school.
It's safe in what way?
The school that I would go to in case that I wasn't accepted into almost all the other schools in the U.S.
Oh, that's what you fell back on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, but you still had a good school to fall back on, so that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good.
So did you take the Gaokao here in China?
No, I didn't.
You just had no plans to go to a Chinese university?
Yeah. So before I went to senior high school in before I started senior high school in China, in the same very much elite school in China, I already decided to go to U.S.
Okay.
For college.
You had that in mind from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning. Then it happened to me, there were two options. One was that the first class of the international division of our school,
mm-hmm.
the very first class, they were just opening at that time.
Uh-huh.
It's a special class designed to send all the students to schools in the U.S. But it was super expensive.
Yeah.
It cost, I think, around 100,000 kwai a year.
To the high school?
The new international division of our high school.
Wow. Well, that's like 16,000 U.S.
Yes.
dollars?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, it was super expensive for China.
Sure. And
for Chinese public school.
And normally, are high schools free here? A public school?
No.
No? You have to pay to go to high school too?
Yes, I gotta pay. I think I paid about maybe 3,000 a year.
Oh, okay. Well, who paid for the other 97,000? Or is that scholarship, or?
I paid 3,000, and that was the only thing required of me. That's the only thing that school bailed me.
Oh, and the school?
That's just the tuition, nothing else.
They just waived the rest of it somehow?
What do you mean?
Like
actually the tuition. I didn't go to that international division. If I went to that division.
Oh, you had gone there. Oh, yeah. Now I see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you just went to the normal high school.
Yeah, not I went to the normal high school.
Oh, all right. And then after high school, you got accepted to Berkeley.
Yes.
Went there. What was that like?
Oh, well, crazy.
Was this your first time out of China?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was crazy. And actually, when I landed in San Francisco,
yeah,
it happened that my dad knew someone who was working in the Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And he picked me up to the hotel in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
Then he left. Then I had absolutely nobody to talk to.
Ah.
I just wandered through the San Francisco streets that night. And the first people who greeted me was the homeless.
Yeah. That must have been kind of a shock, huh?
Yeah, that was total shock. And the second day, I went to Berkeley at the student cafeteria. I was asking them if the apple were free. I thought, well, America was so developed, why wouldn't they give us apples for free?
It must be that rich of a country, huh? Yeah. Free apples for all.
Yeah, free apples for all. Yeah.
Could be a presidential campaign.
Yes.
So they weren't free, I take it?
No. No, it wasn't free, to my surprise.
Well, what was going to school there like?
I kept really busy.
Yeah.
Because like we had a lot of coursework to do in college at Berkeley.
I imagine. What did you study?
Oh, I tried to do 3 majors at the same time.
3 majors?
Yes. Because I was truly interested in 3. And that made me really busy.
Okay. Well, what were your 3 majors then that you wanted to do?
Physics. Mm. Computer science. And economics.
And economics?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And so you were really busy, you said. How did that go? How long were you there?
I spent 2 years at Berkeley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what made you leave?
Because I thought that the reason I was doing that 3 major was crazy.
Yeah, because, I think so, yeah.
Because I didn't really knew what I liked to study.
Okay, yeah.
I picked that 3 major, those 3 majors, because maybe they could earn a lot of money, maybe they were well regarded as good majors at the school. And also in part because those majors were hard.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do harder majors to prove that I was good.
Huh, okay. I mean, those all sound like hard majors.
Yes, and one important reason for the decision to do 3 majors at the same time was because I still wanted to be crazy good. And because I knew that there were only 29 people with 3 majors at Berkeley. I wanted to be one of them.
Ah, okay. Well, how many had 4 majors?
No, nobody.
Nobody. Oh, you could have been the only one with 4 majors. You could have done all 4 and then nobody else has them.
I tried to do two minors.
And 2 minors?
Oh, I was really interested in that. The 2 minors were energy and resources and public policy. Those were connected.
Yeah. Well, you studied a lot of stuff. Diverse array of stuff.
Yes. Yes. And I also went to a lot of those free seminars all the time.
Hmm. Okay. So it sounds like you really expanded your knowledge while you're there.
Yes. Yes. And it was crazy. I was studying 7 days a week.
Yeah.
From when I woke up to 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. It was all like that.
And that's all you did was study?
Yeah. That's all I did.
You didn't like go shopping or something, or like eat, or
I mean, no. If you actually go to my photos library and you find my photos at that time, I looked so crappy.
Yeah,
because I didn't spend any time on making myself clean or buying myself new clothing. No, absolutely no.
Wow.
And I had no time to make friends.
Oh no! So did you get burnt out or something? I mean.
Yeah.
That's just a crazy pace.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that
a little bit burnt out.
Okay. Is that what made you leave?
Yes. And that was part of the reason. And the other reason was that I knew at that time that you could find almost all the courses, especially in computer science, all the real Berkeley courses online.
Oh, so there's no point, in your mind, there's no point in going to the school anyway.
So maybe I could study all of those on my own.
Got it. Huh. Yeah, I guess the American view of university education tends to be more, I mean, the academics is a huge part of it, of course, but there's more to it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like making friends is a big thing, and
joining
clubs, and
Yeah. Only now I knew all this,
yeah.
And I'm still to keep reading on what that college education is supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I could go back and just get a completely different college experience, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so when did you come back to China?
Why?
No. What? When?
When? Oh, it was in September 2014.
Oh, okay. That's right about when Katie and I moved here.
Oh, about the same time.
All right, we've been in China the same amount of time.
Yes.
So what did you do then?
Of course, I tried to study all. I did study all of those computer science courses by UC Berkeley online. And I tried to maybe start my own business on software engineering.
Ah.
That was part of the goal.
What, developing software?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What kind of software?
Basically apps on the on iOS. I didn't know anything about the iOS system at Berkeley. So yeah. I had to study the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Was it really hard to pick up? Did you learn it quickly?
It was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard, and I began to realize that, okay, the theoretical training I got at Berkeley was kind of very different from what is necessary to build a whole app from the scratch.
That they didn't teach you that?
No.
Oh, all right. So you had to kind of really had to start all over then.
No, because I think that part of the Berkeley curriculum is that if you want to do those kind of things, you got to study on your own. It's designed as that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I did computer science also at college, and some of my classes, we didn't even look at a computer. I mean, I'm older than you, obviously, but we had computers, and like it was just all theoretical, and we learned algorithms and stuff that was invented 50 years before then.
Yeah,
that still was totally valid, but I think it gave us a good foundation to go out and do other things, whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
With modern technology,
it's a good foundation, but it was not enough.
Okay.
And after like 7 months of doing that, staying at home in Beijing,
yeah,
I felt it was boring, and I also knew that I was not going to make it in 1 year.
What, not going to finish?
I was not going to finish all the things I wanted to learn on my own and maybe build a business in 1 year, because I thought I could finish all the things in one year, and then I would go back to school.
Oh, okay. So you realize you need more time.
Yeah, I needed more time, and Beijing was becoming boring.
Oh. Well, why did you move to Beijing and not Xi'an?
Well, Beijing was a choice. I still don't like Xi'an. I wouldn't move back to Xi'an at all. Well, there are a lot of happenings here that are not available in Xi'an. in Beijing, you got a really big international community, and you got fine libraries in English, like the Bookworm, or some very good bookstores, like right. Page One in Sanlitun.
Yeah, you do have that, and you do have a lot of foreigners here.
Yes.
It's true. I'm mostly adjusted to this idea now of a small city being like Xi'an. And what does Xi'an have? A couple million
small
people?
Small city?
What is? How big is it?
No, Xi'an is a very big city.
Oh, it is?
Xi'an has 7 to 8 million people.
7 or 8 million? Oh, yes. Okay. So that's kind of a medium-sized Chinese city then, right?
Yeah.
It would be huge in the U.S. It's almost like the size of New York, but it's just kind of medium in China.
Yes.
But Beijing is a big city, for sure.
Yeah.
By anyone's standards.
Yes.
Beijing is giant.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
So you came to Beijing. That you realized you weren't going to finish your coursework in time. And
no.
So then what? What did you do next?
Next thing was that I'm not going to spend all my time in Beijing. Then why don't I move out of it? Then I began Googling all the destinations I could go. The first requirement was that I could easily get visas. The places where someone with a Chinese passport could easily attend the visa and
sure.
could easily stay there for a long enough period of time.
Yeah, and I imagine you don't have as many options as Americans
now,
have in that regard.
Now, the first options I realized were Mauritius.
Mauritius?
And Fiji.
Ah, okay.
Because those two remote island countries actually offer the Chinese visa on arrival.
Okay.
And with that visa, we could stay there for more than 3 months, half a year for Fiji.
Oh, that's good. Because it's an island and you'd have to fly kind of far if you wanted to leave, right?
Yeah.
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 Can't just run across the border and come back.
No.
All right. So those were your first options?
Yeah, those were my first options.
And is that where you ended up going?
No.
So what happened?
No. And then the other thought was that maybe I could just travel. I could spend like 15 days in a country before moving on to another.
Okay.
Then, based on this idea, I got my first route, which is to go to Nepal first, and then India. And then maybe Pakistan, Iran, and all the way up to Turkey.
Okay, and are these kind of easily attainable visas too for Chinese people?
Well, at the time I thought it would be easy.
Yeah.
But it's actually not that easy, especially for Pakistan.
Okay. So, what did you end up doing then? Where did you actually go?
Oh. So I actually had to go to Vietnam,
and,
Cambodia, and Thailand.
Okay, so those are all like close and Southeast Asian nations.
Yes.
All right, and you hadn't been to those countries before, right?
No. When I researched the idea about going to Southeast Asia, I was like, wow. Actually, you could easily get visas to those countries, and their prices are low. Yeah. Well, those appear to be very good options.
Yeah, I would say those are all significantly cheaper than China,
and
or at least not as cheap as I've been to cheaper places, but those are cheap countries.
And those countries were connected with budget airlines.
It's Jiup, yep, okay.
And a lot of those countries have visa on arrivals.
Sure.
Indonesia has one, and Vietnam has a de facto visa on arrival. Actually, a visa you have to pick up at the airport.
Okay.
And if you don't want to go back to your home country, in my case, China, you could live there for forever. You could spend 2 months in Indonesia, 3 months in Vietnam, and then maybe 1 month in Cambodia.
Yeah, and then start over.
Yeah, and then start over, and you don't have to go back at all.
All right, so were you just discovering this on your own, or did someone...
Yes, I was discovering all this on my own.
Okay, because there
online.
For people who haven't been to those countries, there's a large expat community of Westerners, especially in Thailand.
Yeah.
I mean, a ton of people go there and just live there for years.
Yeah.
And don't have a permanent residency. They just, they'll go to Cambodia for a day.
That's totally true.
Yeah, you can just go back and forth between countries and do that forever as long as you stay out of trouble. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to do.
Yes.
But it's cool that you just kind of like discovered this on your own.
Yeah, I discovered all this on my own from the first idea of Fiji, Mauritius,
yeah.
And then this, the spirit of the principle didn't change, but the places changed to Nepal, India, and then it changed to Southeast Asia, and this was the plan I settled on.
Okay. So I remember we met maybe 6 or 7 months ago,
yeah.
Maybe 8 months ago, and in Beijing,
yeah.
We did that trip to the Great Wall, went hiking and
yeah.
Camping. That was fun. And then you were telling me back then, like, hey, I'm about to leave.
Yes.
So let's see, did you take a train out of China then, or did you fly into Vietnam?
I actually took a train all the way to Guangzhou.
Okay.
Actually the third largest city in China right now. And I spent 1 month there.
Yeah. 1 month in Guangzhou?
Yeah, 1 month in Guangzhou.
Did you go into Hong Kong?
Yes, I stayed in Hong Kong for 5 days.
Huh, cool.
And then took a flight from Hong Kong to Da Nang in Vietnam.
Oh, straight to Da Nang?
Yeah,
to Da Nang. Central Vietnam. Okay.
Yes. Yes, it was totally because the cost was cheaper to go to Da Nang first.
Interesting.
Huh. If I had to take a train from Guangzhou to Vietnam, I got to get that visa through one of those agencies in China. The price was about 400 kuai.
Okay.
And and then I got to take the train. If you add up the total price, and I think it's much more expensive than directly fly from Hong Kong to Da Nang.
Sure. I remember going through this too with Vietnam. The rules are probably slightly different for Americans, but I think if you fly to Vietnam, don't quote me on this, but I think if you fly there, you can just get a visa at the airport.
Yeah.
And if you want to take a train in or a boat or whatever, Katie and I ended up taking a boat down the Mekong from Cambodia. So we entered on the Mekong River.
Yes.
And we had to go get our visas beforehand.
Yeah.
Which, luckily, we live in Beijing, which obviously has embassies for every country, so we just went down to the embassy and got our visas. But it'd be a little more complicated if we lived in a smaller part of China.
Yes.
But yeah, that worked out. So you flew into Vietnam, and this was now, what, your third country, right?
Yeah, my third country.
Cool.
And the first country I visited, and I couldn't speak the local language.
Yeah.
I had a lot more to adjust to.
Yeah, that must be hard.
Yes.
Although English is pretty well spoken in Vietnam.
Yes.
Yeah. But the language obviously is completely different. And
yes, it was.
I guess at least Vietnam, you can kind of read the signs.
Yeah, because...
They more or less use the Western alphabet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, so that did you stay in Da Nang, or where did you go?
I stayed in Da Nang for like a week.
And what were you doing while you were at these places for a week or whatever? Were you exploring or working?
Working. I was actually working. What I did was that I found a place on the beach run by a Vietnamese named Hua, and he had two tables and a small restaurant where you could order drink. He had internet. Mm-hmm. It's about 100 meters from the sea.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So for the first few days, I spent my whole days working there, occasionally going to the sea, and then talking with those travelers who spent their time there.
Okay. Well, that's cool. What were you working on then?
I was still working on a few apps, and I was experimenting on them. I was still trying to learn some new stuff about the iOS, and I think at that time I was trying to figure out if I needed to learn something more about design at that time.
Yeah, this is cool. It's like you're getting educated on the road.
Yeah.
And I don't know, are you familiar with the term digital nomad?
Yeah.
I guess that's what you were then. You became your own digital nomad.
Yeah. I later found out this term, and they actually had a whole website called nomadlist.io, and it was totally devoted to digital nomads, and they have the calculations on the prices, and they ranked the top locations for digital nomads, and they have a discussion forum for us.
And so, if you don't mind me asking, how much did this hotel in Vietnam, 100 meters from the beach, cost you?
200,000 dongs.
$200,000
a day,
like $9 maybe.
Yeah, $9.
Yeah. Not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah,
not bad. Later, I knew that this was a usual price for a single day, for a single room in a Vietnamese hotel.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we get a little cheaper than that, but then we weren't 100 meters from the ocean either.
No.
Yeah, that's a pretty cheap country to travel through, and nice. It's good weather all year.
Yes, and that was where I first get to know more about kind of foreigners living in Vietnam, kind of expat living. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of retired U.S. Marines.
Marines, yes. Wow.
Da Nang was a place where they fought very fiercely, and there was a big U.S. base out there in the past, and a lot of those Marines returned to Da Nang for retirement.
Wow.
And some of those, like me, they would spend a lot of hours at that restaurant by the sea.
Wow, I was unaware that Marines came back and to this land that they were fighting a war in.
Yeah,
like when they were young. Wow, that's a surprise.
Yeah, there were actually a lot of them, and and they would tell me interesting stories of their fighting and. And I also met a European journalist who were trying to make something like a documentary on the U.S. Marines.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. Is anybody actually documenting this? Because that sounds like a really cool story.
Yes,
interesting.
He was documenting those actually U.S. Marines who returned to Vietnam.
Okay, I'm gonna have to look this up then and see if I can find any more info, and I'll put it in the show notes for people to see if I can find anything.
Yes.
Huh? That's cool information.
Those people were very interesting.
I bet they were.
Yeah.
It sounds like you kind of started living your life in a very normal Chinese way, if you don't mind me saying. Like, growing up in Xi'an, and you had your family, and you went to school for English.
Yes.
And then at some point, you went to the U.S. That's very normal, too. Went to college.
Yes.
And at like age, 19 or 20, you just left, right? You changed your life completely. And
yes.
Now you just seem so... your attitude toward life just seems so different from most people I meet.
Oh, yeah. Like, that changed me a lot.
So it was your experience in the U.S. that changed you?
Both okay. The experience in U.S. and then all the traveling.
Yeah. And you've definitely packed in a lot in your youth, only 21 years. You've done quite a bit already.
Yes.
And let's go to the present and to the future. So right now you came back to Beijing for a while.
Yes.
You did all this travel and work, and sounds like you had what I would call an amazing experience, like learning about the world, learning about computers, building apps, kind of building your technical skills and your worldliness, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Now you're kind of in Beijing. Are you building up for another trip, or what's next on your list? What are you doing next?
I'm building up an even bigger and longer trip for this whole year.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're now in 2016.
Yes.
I guess it's February now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So 2016 is going to be your big year.
Yes, my big year.
Okay. What are you going to do?
I'll travel through Russia, from all the way from the east side to the west side, and then stay in St. Petersburg for about 3 years, and then
3 years.
30 days.
Oh, 30 days. I'm sorry. Misunderstood.
30 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'll go to Iran, Turkey, and then the whole of Europe.
Okay. Oh, so you're kind of going back to your second idea from before. Your first idea was Fiji and Mauritius.
Yes.
Then you were saying Nepal, India, Pakistan, Turkey, Iran.
Yeah.
But Pakistan was out, it sounded like. So now you're kind of cutting that off and going directly to Iran.
Yeah.
Ah, I'm starting to see the bigger picture now of why you're doing what you're doing.
I'm kind of between those countries. I would spend like from Beijing to St. Petersburg, there will be 10 to 15 days of traveling.
On the Trans-Siberian?
On the Trans-Siberian. Oh, yeah, okay. I'll basically work, I'll still work, but much less than I would if I stay in a city.
Yeah.
I'll spend a lot of time go backpacking and enjoy the scenery. And then I would spend 30 days in St. Petersburg. I would work intensely. I would get to know some Russian friends, some local friends. I would spend time with them. And I would go to explore the city of St. Petersburg.
Okay. Do you know people there now, or are you planning you're hoping to meet people there?
I know only one person from St. Petersburg. I hope to meet more.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fun. You'll build up your social skills, make sure you're outgoing. That's one good thing travel does.
Yes.
It forces you to talk to people.
Yes, it already forced me to kind of make friends.
Yeah. Now, do you plan to go from Beijing directly to Vladivostok, or how are you going to start this trip? Or are you starting to? Are you not going to Vladivostok?
I'm going.
Yeah?
I think I'm going by train to there, to Vladivostok.
Okay, so there is like kind of a direct line that goes what, around North Korea and then up to Vladivostok from Beijing?
Maybe. I haven't researched that yet.
Oh, all right. I guess I don't know. I was in a different part of Inner Mongolia in China, that there was another track that went up to bypassing Mongolia to go directly into Russia.
Yeah.
By a town called Manjuli in China.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's one other way to do it. But you'd cut off a huge part of the Trans-Siberian if you went that way. So, I don't know, there's some kind of romantic notion of going all the way from Vladivostok all the way to Moscow.
Yes.
And then up to St. Petersburg.
And now I want to go to Sakhalin Island. That island was the big Russian prison island in the old times.
Oh, Sakhalin. And you were showing me this the other day. I remember on the map. Yes. It's just north of Japan.
Yes.
Like, very close to there must be the northernmost Japanese island. And then,
yeah, very close. You could take a ferry from Japan if you'd like.
Oh, you can. Yeah. So there's people living on this island now?
Yeah.
Sakhalin?
Yeah.
And you, what do you want to do? Check out the old prisons? Or
maybe if there is still old prison, I would go. Uh-huh. And I would actually read that book by Anton Chekhov on the island in I think 1890s.
Okay. I'll look that book up too.
It's a lot of people say it's one of the best in investigation journalism back then, at that time.
All right. Yeah, it sounds like you...
I read part of the book. It was fascinating.
Cool. I mean, you've got such a diverse interests that it's really interesting to talk to you about this.
Yeah, because I audited a class on Anton Chekhov in Berkeley. And we actually went through part of that book.
Uh-huh.
And it will be so interesting to go to see the places mentioned in the book and go to simply read the Russian faces and speak with Russians and compare that with the book. And in part, I've already done that. Because Anton Chekhov was such a good writer. I think he just caught the essence of the Russian people. If I speak with one of the Russians right now, I could see some figures in the Chekhov story from them, because they share a lot of things in common.
Hmm.
This is very fascinating.
Cool. Well, wish you the best of luck in doing that. I think you'll have a great experience going there. That always makes stories more interesting, going to the place where it happened.
Yeah. And because the way Chekhov wrote it, I mean, the way the Russians behaved in the old times, I think still holds true right now. You can see it.
Hmm.
It's very subtle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome. So let's see. You're going to go across Russia to St. Petersburg and end up in Europe somewhere?
Oh, I actually thought of going directly from Russia to Europe.
Where do you plan to go?
Right now it's Paris. I'll spend like 30 to 40 days in Paris.
Okay. So you've been staying with me for a couple days and trying to sort out visas, right?
Yeah, it is hard. It is a hard thing right now because if you have a Chinese passport and if you want a Schengen visa, you got to tell them what you do on each of the days you spend in the Schengen zone. For me, it will be about 60 days. Maybe it will go up to 90 days. And it will take a long time to write down this whole itinerary.
Oh, every single day you have to write, like, well, today I'm going to the Eiffel Tower, and today I'm going to the Louvre. And
yes, yes. If you write something wrong, this might be a reason for them not to give you the visa.
Ah, I see. Well, I hope it all works out.
Yes, actually, originally, I wanted to spend more time in Berlin. Because of the visa requirement, now I have to spend more time in France. It's all because only the French consulate would give us that long-term tourist visa.
Oh, only the French will give it?
Yes, okay. And they follow a certain rule. For the first, typically for the first visa you get from France, yeah, you will get 3 months multiple entry visa. The second time they'll give you 1 year multiple entry visa.
Oh, all right.
The third time they'll give you 5 year, which is very good.
Yeah, that's very good.
But if you get a German Schengen visa, that visa will not be counted into the French system. So if you get a multiple entry visa from Germany, and then you want to get another tourist visa from France, they will start their own calculation. So if it's the first time you apply a French Schengen visa, they actually would give you that 3 months multiple entry visa, which is not so useful for me.
Hmm. All right. It's all very interesting that there's all these various countries in Europe and governments that,
yes,
in theory, they all exist separately, but then as far as travel and this visa system, they're kind of intertwined, but not exactly.
Yes.
And it seems a little strange to me, at least being an American, that someone might try coming to Germany, and then Germany doesn't really want them, but they have to let them in because France let them in, or something like that. But I guess that's just how the system is set up.
Yes.
That there's this giant zone called Schengen zone. And
yes.
Once you're in, you're in. Okay. Well, we have to wrap it up right now, but let's just talk very briefly about, you mentioned Iran and Turkey in there, and I just kind of want to know how that fits into the puzzle, how those two countries fit in. What are you going there after Europe?
I think before Europe right now.
Oh, okay. So you're going there, then Europe. And that's going to take this whole year, 2016. And do you have plans for after that? Coming back home, or have you not thought about that yet?
Yeah, I have some plans. I know a lot of different options. And one of those is to prepare to go back to Berkeley in the fall of 2017. And if I do that, I could, in the early part of 2017, I could spend 3 months in Pakistan and 3 months in India.
Okay. Wow, cool. So you are really thinking long term.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to stay in touch, and maybe I can have you back on again if I see you before I leave Beijing or next time we meet.
Yes.
Definitely. I'm really interested in how all of this goes, because you've got some really grandiose plans, and let's see how it works out.
Yeah, let's see.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on the show, Wang Yi.
You're welcome.
Wish you the best of luck in your travels.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com.
From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.